spread of technology and the spread of people were, of course, one and the same. This all seems to have taken place in Asia by a process of going outward and then returning. Physiologist Jared Diamond helps us to see how this worked by leading us on a pilgrimage to Wallace's line. That's an imaginary line separating Borneo and Java from the Celebes and the other islands to the southeast. Crossing that line, he says, may have been what made our ancestors truly human. Alfred Russel Wallace was the now almost forgotten scientist who formulated the theory of evolution by natural selection at the same time Darwin did. Darwin had pretty well finished writing The Origin of Species when he learned that Wallace was about to publish a similar idea. When Wallace heard about Darwin, he did something that we find astonishing today. He politely stood aside and let Darwin publish first. Among his many contributions, Wallace identified the demarcation between species of Southeast Asia and completely different species in Australia and New Guinea. There are other such regions. The Sahara is one. A band from northwest India through the Himalayas and Indochina forms another such zone of separation. But Wallace's line has special importance. For a long time, we've known that modern humans evolved in Africa 100,000 or so years ago, and that they began making dramatic art and tools in Europe 30 or 40,000 years ago. But we've paid scant attention to the world southeast of Wallace's line. The so-called Java ape man fossils make it clear that ancestors of modern humans reached Southeast Asia a million years ago. Java man got as far as Borneo and Java over land links that existed before the glacial epochs, but those links ended there, and he couldn't get to New Guinea and Australia. Yet modern humans have occupied Australia for 60,000 years. Somehow, modern humans appeared in Java man's world, and they managed to go island hopping all the way to Australia. There they practiced advanced art and technology that rivals what we find in the caves of Central Europe. The catch is, they did so much earlier than the European Cro-Magnons. And so, Jared Diamond observes, we were the one species that lived on both sides of Wallace's line. The crucible of human creativity might well have been Australia. He believes that the art and technology of Australian Aborigines slowly trickled back and eventually reached Europe. Diamond thinks that crossing Wallace's line was the giant step that made us into a technological species. Eventually, the vast geography and resources of Eurasia allowed the Aborigines' cousins to run ahead, to invent writing and the wheel, to build cannons and cathedrals. Eventually, when Dutch and English navigators found their way back to Australia, all they saw were shockingly primitive humans. They had no way to see the sophistication of Aborigine survival strategies. They had no idea that they should be saying thank you to those ancient teachers. But that was all before Neolithic advances. Once we had agriculture, the nature of human migration changed. Diamond asks us to consider the odd fact that of the four large continents, only one runs east and west. It's the largest one, Eurasia, formed by Europe and Asia. Eurasia is 9,000 miles wide. Both the Americas and Africa run north and south. Furthermore, climate largely follows latitude, not longitude. Eurasia is not only the largest of the continents, but it's the only one where you can travel more than 3,000 miles without encountering radical changes in the general climate. That fact has had a powerful influence on human life. The llama never found its way from South America into Central America, nor did the bison move south beyond present-day United States. Mexican corn couldn't grow in Canada. In Eurasia, horses and cattle spread to both Spain and China. After agriculture rose in the Middle East, it spread methodically eastward and westward. Not only did domestic plants have lands to move into, the people who grew them also followed the climates they'd learned to tolerate. That spread didn't strictly follow lines of latitude, but it zigged slightly to accommodate climatic variations. We saw in Track 10 how agriculture found its way through the Balkans and diagonally across Europe. It finally reached the temperate parts of Ireland around 3000 BC. The humans who used domesticated animals in agriculture were part and parcel of those technologies. As we moved with our animals in agriculture, our technologies followed. Two particular technologies, virtually unknown in Africa and the Americas, spread laterally in Eurasia. They were writing and the wheel. The wheel, invented 5,500 years ago at the northern end of the Fertile Crescent, diffused rapidly across Eurasia. Ancient Mexicans thought of the wheel, but since agriculture didn't move north or south, neither did the wheel. It died in isolation. Writing, invented over 5,000 years ago in Egypt, traveled rapidly throughout Eurasia and across North Africa, but not downward into sub-Saharan Africa. Writing also arose in Central America, but like the wheel, it stayed there. So, agriculture and domesticated animals came late to the other three large continents, and once there, they stayed horizontally stratified. Diamond's radical suggestion is that the lateral diffusion of agriculture in Eurasia jump-started all its technologies. Long ago, Daniel Webster had a visceral understanding of this process. In 1840, just before he became Secretary of State, he wrote,
"When tillage begins, other arts follow. The farmers, therefore, are the founders of civilization."
Now Diamond suggests that early inhabitants were able to give full expression to that natural kinship of agriculture and technology on only one continent, only in horizontal Eurasia.